जय राधा माधवा कुंज विहारी, जय राधा माधवा कुंज विहारी, गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिवर दारी, गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिवर दारी, यशोदा नंदना व्रज जन रंजना, यशोदानंदना ब्रज जन रंजना, यशोदानंदना ब्रज जन रंजना, यमुना तीरावनचारी, यमुना तीरावनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी, गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिवर दारी, यशोदानंदना व्रज जन रंजना, यशोदानंदना व्रज जन रंजना, यमुना तीरावन जारी, यमुना तीरावन जारी, हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, जय राधा गोविंद राधा गोविंद राधे जय गौरनिताय 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 जय गौरनिताय जय जगन्नाथ जगन्नाथ बलदेवा जय सुभद्रा प्रभुपाद 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 जय जय प्रभुपाद
जयम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमद एस डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयं मुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीरुत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नंदनाय च नंदगोपकुमाराय गोविंदाय नमो नमः। हरे कृष्ण। सो यस्टरडे वी completed the 9th chapter of second canto. So today we'll try to cover the 10th chapter. So this chapter is titled by Srila Prabhupada as Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions, because the 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam will be discussed in this chapter. And Srila Vishnu Jagadrakur titles this chapter as the 10 characteristics of a Purana and the third description of the universal form. So we'll have one more description of universal form in this chapter. And also, if you see here, Srila Vishnu Jagadrakur titles this as the 10 characteristics of a Purana. So these 10 characteristics that we are going to see now are not 10 characteristics of Bhagavatam. Any literature to qualify as a Mahapuran should have these 10 topics. So all the 18 Puranas, they all have these 10 topics. But there is something that distinguishes Srimad Bhagavatam from these other Puranas, which we will see. We have already seen it in the introduction of second canto. We briefly touched upon that subject. We will see it once more for our, just to refresh. So in the previous chapter, Sukadeva Goswami was mentioning, when he was mentioning about the chronology of this discussion that took place between Brahmaji and Narada Muni, and Brahmaji and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he mentioned that Brahmaji spoke this script literature called Bhagavatam to Narada Muni, that Bhagavatam which contains 10 characteristics, he mentioned. Puranam Dashalakshanam. So what are those 10 lakshanas? That's what he is going to discuss in the first part of this 10th chapter. So today we are hard pressed for time. It's a long chapter, so we may not be able to take many questions. Few questions definitely we'll take, but somehow we'll have to complete this chapter in the first session only. So let's see what we can do. So the 10 topics, he right away starts by mentioning the 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam. Shri Shuka Uvacha Atra Sargo Visargascha Sthanam Poshanamutayah Manvantareshanukata Nirodo Muktirashrayah. In this Purana there are 10 topics. Atra, here. Sarga, Visarga, Sthanam, Poshanam, Uti, Manvantara, Ishanukata, Nirodo, Mukti and Ashraya. These are the 10 topics. So what they mean, anyway, that description is coming. So we'll just see the names for now. But what is the purpose of these 10 topics is described in this second verse. Dashamasya vishuddhyartam navanam iha lakshanam varnayanti mahatmana shrute narte nacha anjasa. Mahatmanaha anjasa varnayanti. The great souls describe properly navanam iha lakshanam, the other 9 topics, which means the first 9 topics are described properly by the great experts in Bhagavatam. Dashamasya vishuddhi artham, for the sole purpose of imparting the highest knowledge about the 10th topic. Shrutena cha artena. And how do they do it? They do it by quoting the words of the scripture, which means various words of the scriptures, and by narrating various stories to illustrate this subject matter. So it is only for the purpose of bringing out the true glory of the 10th topic that the other 9 topics are described. That's why the 10th topic is called Ashraya. Ashraya means that which gives shelter. Like say for example, if let's say Prime Minister Narendra Modi is going to visit Kolkata temple. So then automatically, you know, the roads and everything, you know, would be properly laid, you know, by the government only will take care of all those things. Okay, so many infrastructure would be, you know, it would be repaired and mended, new infrastructure would come. So, in one sense you can say, the Prime Minister is the Ashraya. Only because he is coming, the other infrastructure has been laid. If he is not coming, then there is no need for laying all that infrastructure. In other words, like in one sense you can say, we have guest house, guest rooms here. Let's say if no guests are going to visit Kolkata temple, I hope not. We pray that many guests visit. So you can say that in one sense the guests are the shelter or ashraya of these guest rooms. Because if the guests were not going to visit, then no one would spend so much money constructing so many guest rooms. So therefore, in Bhagavatam, there is no purpose of describing these other 9 topics if the 10th topic was not going to be described. And this is the speciality of only Srimad Bhagavatam. Because in other scriptures, we will see, these other 9 topics are sometimes described not necessarily for the purpose of glorifying the 10th topic. they are separately described also. Bhagavatam itself admits to this fact. So, during the introduction of second canto, we saw two examples to understand the purpose of these nine topics. Can someone recollect? We saw the example of focused lights. Do you remember? So, here we have Radha Govindji. So, they are standing. They are the Ashray Tattva. And this morning we had very nice darshan. Every day morning we take their beautiful darshan. But what we do not actively think about is we are able to take this nice darshan because at various strategic points you have focus lights which are fit. Okay? Some focus light is focusing on Govindji's face. Another focus light is focusing on Radharani's face. And there are other focus lights placed at strategic points which can, you know, properly shine forth on the various bodily limbs of Govindji. So, if these focus lights are not there, or if they are not there at their strategic position, then we will not be able to appreciate the beauty of Govindev. It's not that Govindev has become any less beautiful. He is as beautiful as ever. He is not dependent on the focused lights to beautify himself. But our appreciation of Govindev's beauty is very much dependent on the focused lights. So, the 10th canto description of the pastimes of Krishna, they are independent. They are independently wonderful. They don't need the support of the other 9 cantos. But we need the support. If we do not have the proper understanding of the first 9 cantos or the other 9 topics, then we cannot properly appreciate the glory of the 10th topic of Krishna. So, these other 9 topics are just like these focus lights, which can properly accentuate the beauty of Krishna. So that we can properly appreciate. Having said that, the 10th topic is only the ashraya, because the way the analogy is put forth, it might seem like Govindadev is dependent on the focus lights. It's not that way. If Govindadev was not there, no one would put all those focus lights there. There is no need. And another example that we saw was, if someone has to glorify someone, let's say if someone has passed out from IIT Kharagpur and you have to recommend his name to some professor for higher studies. So, in order to recommend his name, you might have to glorify the institution IIT Kharagpur. It's such a wonderful institution. The best, the cream of Indian youth, they take admission there. And people who pass out from this institution, they enter into premier institutes for higher studies, or they get placed in the best companies. And we may go on glorifying the institute. But what is the purpose of glorifying the institute? Is eventually to glorify this person who has passed out from that institute. So, if we say that all I need to do, all I want to do is to glorify this person, so why do I have to glorify the institute? There is no need. I will just say he has passed out from IIT Kharagpur, that's sufficient. If the other person does not know what is IIT Kharagpur, then he may not properly appreciate this person also. Okay? So in that case, it's not a proper glorification of this person. Even though the ultimate purpose is to glorify this person, that person can be properly glorified only if whatever he is related to, if that is glorified. So in that sense, a proper glorification of a proper understanding of the true glories of the Samam Bonam, the Ashraya Tattva of Krishna, which is described in the 10th canto, that proper appreciation cannot be realized unless the other 9 topics are understood in a way in which it is presented in Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay? And the speciality of Srimad Bhagavatam is that only in this literature does all these other 9 topics are discussed in such a way to bring out the true glory of the 10th topic. Bhagavatam in its 12th chapter, 12th canto, this verse comes. Kalimala samhati kalano akilesho harir itaratra na giyate hi abhikshnam iha tu punar bhagavan asheshamurti paripatito anupadam kata prasangaihi. Shukadeva Goswami says that harir akileshah, the Supreme Lord Hari, kalimala samhati kalanah, who is the one who destroys the accumulated sins of Kali, that Supreme Lord Hari, itaratra. Itaratra means in these other scriptures other than Srimad Bhagavatam, nahi abhikshnam giyate. Abhikshnam means constant. There is no constant glorification of Lord Hari in the other scriptures. They may at the most glorify most of the times, but sometimes there are some sections which do not actually directly glorify, or even they are not meant to even indirectly glorify Lord Hari. Okay. Tu. What is the meaning of tu? But. Iha tu. But here. Why would you use this phrase, but here? In order to contrast. In contrast, in Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavan Ashesha Murti, the unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead, punaha, again and again, paripatito anupadam, again and again, he is constantly glorified in every single syllable. Kata prasangaihi, in the pretext of mentioning various stories, actually it is the Supreme Lord who is glorified in every single syllable. That is the glory of Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay? And no other scripture can claim to have this one-pointed goal which Bhagavatam has. Because it is a product of, Vyasadeva had compiled all other literatures. And then Narada Muni appears, and when he instructs him as to how, you have to accomplish this task, which is the most important task which you have never done it before. So whatever literatures that Vyasadeva had compiled till then did not have this solid purpose. So Jiva Goswami mentions that every single syllable of Srimad Bhagavatam is a glorification of Krishna. Even though we may not realize, how it is glorification. Like I also gave this example. If, let's say, Howrah station is in which direction from here? This is which direction? Okay, someone says west, someone says south. Let's say it's in the, whichever direction. Let's say, hypothetically, it's in the western direction. Okay, doesn't matter. So, let's say if it's in the western direction, this direction, it's not that from this temple hall, we start walking in the true west. We will not end up anywhere. We will end up at the lotus feet of Baldevji. But we may not reach Howrah station, we will reach a better destination. But, so just because Howrah station is in the western direction, doesn't mean that you start walking from here, right in the western direction from the temple hall only. So you may have to first go out of this temple room, then take a left, then take another U-turn, go down the stairs, get out. And a person who exactly knows, a guide, who exactly knows how to take you from temple hall to Howrah station, he may sometimes take you even in the opposite direction. In order to reach true west, you may sometimes have to navigate in the eastern direction, which is exactly 180 degree opposite. But he knows where he is taking you. So therefore, we may come across some sections of Srimad Bhagavatam which we may not be able to relate how this is going to invoke my devotion, how this is going to help me perfectly understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We may not always be able to relate in that way. But having said that, Vyasadeva, Sukadeva Goswami, who are our guides, they exactly know how it happens. So certain sections we have to have faith that it is actually needed for my progressive purification to understand the 10th topic properly. We may not always be able to understand how. And it is not necessary that we will never be able to understand how. But once the necessary requisite purification happens, over a period of time, definitely we will be able to appreciate why this topic was put here in Srimad Bhagavatam and how it has helped me. Many things we appreciate in retrospect, isn't it? Like we grew up, and children while growing up never appreciate their parents. Okay, mostly. Because that gratitude is like is a quality which develops much later in one's life. So they always have complaints, you know, my mother doesn't let me do this, my father doesn't let me do this. But once they grow up, pass out from their college, then after some time, when they themselves become parents, then in retrospect, they develop lot of appreciation towards their parents or teachers or whatever it may be. The point is, most things in life, if we think about it, we always appreciate it in retrospect only. It's not that we always had an appreciation or proper appreciation of what we were getting at that point of time. Isn't it? So the same way, many things we may study in Bhagavatam also, we may not appreciate it then and there, but over a period of time we should have faith that we will appreciate it. Because just like our parents were genuine well-wishers, even though we were not able to appreciate that good wishes at that point of time. Similarly, Vyasadeva and Sukadeva Goswami, they are also much more genuine well-wishers. Not only are they well-wishers, but they really know what is well for us, what is good for us. So when they have put certain sections at different places, strategic locations, we may not be able to understand, but at least we must have faith that these are well-wishers and they know what they are doing. So in the third canto, fifth chapter, you all have read. This is just Maitreya. Vidura has just met Maitreya. He has reached the banks of Saraswati. Maitreya's ashram is on the banks of Saraswati, and he has come all the way. After his Tirtha Yatra, he met Uddhava on the banks of Yamuna in Mathura, and from there he walks all the way to meet Maitreya. And Maitreya is he was the classmate of Vyasadev, and Vyasadev is the father of Vidura. Okay, and Vyasadev is much more illustrious than Maitreya. He is known as he is called Vyasadev, which means who has compiled all the Vedic literatures. And being the son of such an illustrious personality, Maitreya might ask, "You are Vyasadeva's son. How come you have come all the way to hear Krishna Katha from me?" Doesn't make sense. Your father is much more illustrious. You should be hearing Krishna Katha from him. And he has compiled so many wonderful literatures, and Mahabharat being his magnum opus creation. How come you are not hearing from Vyasadeva, how come you have come to hear Krishna Katha from me? So Vidura says, honestly, let me express my heart. He says, Paravaresham Bhagavan Vratani Shrutani Me Vyasamukada Bhikshnam Atrupnum Akshulla Sukavahanam Tesham Rite Krishna Katam Ritogat. He says, my dear Lord, Maitreya, Shrutani Me Abhikshnam. Both bar sunchukam. Abhikshnam means constantly I have heard from Vyasadev. Para avaresham vratani. About the various activities of the elevated persons like the Pandavas and not so elevated person like the Kauravas. Again and again I have heard all these things Vyasa Mukhat from the mouth of my father Vyasadev. Tesham atrupnuma, and I am not very satisfied. Hearing, I was not very satisfied. Why? Kshulla sukavahanam. Because it gave me insignificant happiness, because it was devoid of constant glorification of Krishna. Krishna katamrita ogat rite. Rite means it was devoid of constant glorification of Krishna. So I am interested in hearing a literature which would constantly glorify Krishna, which I think Uddhava told me that you are capable of delivering that. So that's why I have come here. I have heard all these things, but all those literatures, in that there was no constant glorification of Krishna, therefore I am not satisfied. So therefore I am here to hear about such a literature in which there is constant glorification of Krishna. And same thing Shaunakadi Rishi is also mentioned in the beginning of second canto. They said, Kata Hari Kata Udarka. So please speak any kata that would be that would conclusively be a glorification of Krishna. Just like we saw glorification of IIT Kharagpur. It is not direct glorification of that personality, but it is conclusively glorification of that personality. So Bhagavatam is that kind of literature. Whatever other stories or allegories or various other presentations, they are presented, but ultimately they glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's the speciality of the Srimad Bhagavatam as distinguished from the other scriptures. So now, having described the, having just stated these 10 topics, now Shukadeva Goswami is going to explain or define these 10 topics. What are these 10 topics? So he says, Bhutamatra Indriyadiyam Janma Sarga Udahritaha Brahmano Guna Vaishamyat Visarga Paurusha Smritaha. Bhuta refers to the material elements. Matra refers to the tanmatras. Tanmatras means the sense objects. Bhuta matra indriya, the senses. Dhyam here refers to the false ego. Okay. From pradan mahatattva, mahatattva false ego, and from false ego various other things are created. So he says that bhuta matra indriya dhyam janma. The creation of these elements, sarga udahritaha, is called sarga or primary creation. And when does this sarga happen? Brahmano guna vaishamyad. Gunas, the three gunas. Vaishamya means agitation in this context. Okay. Brahmano guna vaishamyad. And how do the gunas get agitated? By the glance of the Supreme Lord. Karanodaka Sai Vishnu. So, here, who is speaking this verse? Shukadeva Goswami. He is mentioning that creation of all these elements, which started through the agitation of the three modes in the pradhan, which were inactive, how through the glance of Karanodaka Sai Vishnu, this process is called sarga. So this Sarga was described in the second canto, fifth chapter. Okay. Then Visarga Paurusha Smritaha. What is Visarga? The second topic. Paurushaha. Paurushaha means creation of Purusha. Here the Purusha refers to the body, because the Jiva, he is identifying with the body. So therefore the body is addressed as also as Purusha. Later, few verses down the line, we will also see that how the body is, for conventional reasons, addressed as Purusha. Okay? Even though the Supreme Lord is the only Purusha. But here, because the Jiva is identifying with the body, therefore here the body is called Purusha. And the creation of that body is called Paurusha. Visarga Paurusha Smritaha. Creation of the bodies of various living entities, which is carried out by Brahmaji and the various Prajapatis, this is called Visarga. This is the second topic. So, Sarga is described in the second canto and third cantos primarily. Of course, Jiva Goswami says it is an offense to attribute topics to specific cantos, because Bhagavatam, in Bhagavatam, many, many topics are discussed in one canto. So you cannot say this canto exclusively talks only about Sarga. That's not the understanding. So therefore, when we attribute Sarga to third canto, it means Sarga is primarily discussed in third canto, but it has so many other topics also discussed. So primarily Sarga is attributed to third canto, even though second canto also talks significantly about the process of primary creation. And Visarga is described in third canto also, but more or less the whole of fourth canto is Visarga only. It was creation by Brahmaji and his descendants. Swayambhuvamanu and Uttanapad. Uttanapad's lineage is more or less, the whole of fourth canto is Uttanapad's lineage only. So Visarga is attributed to fourth canto, meaning primarily it is described in fourth canto. Then the third topic is Stiti. He mentions Stitir Vaikunta Vijaya Poshanam Tadanugraha Manvantarani Saddharma Utayakarma Vasana. The next four topics are defined here. Stitir Vaikunta Vijaya. Sthanam or Stiti refers to the Lord protecting his devotees, or every living entity is constitutionally a devotee only. Okay? Because Poshanam specifically refers to the Lord's protection or mercy towards his devotees, while Sthanam refers to a more general mercy that is bestowed upon all living entities in the form of different planetary systems for different living entities, so that they can stay nicely. And each one of these planets are so designed that it's very much conducive to the psychophysical nature of the living entities. So therefore it is called Stitir Vaikunta Vijaya. Sthanam refers to protection of the Lord, and this shows the excellence of the Supreme Lord. This is excellence because for the Lord to have a very favorable disposition towards his devotee is easy. But for the Lord to have a very kind and favorable disposition to rebellious souls is more so an act of mercy. The Lord's reciprocation with his devotees, you can say it's more or less equal reciprocation. But the Lord's reciprocation with the rebellious souls is certainly an act of mercy. So therefore it's addressed here as, this shows the excellence of the Supreme Lord. So this is described in the fifth canto. The Vedic cosmology is described, second half of fifth canto. Poshanam tad anugraha. Poshanam means the Lord's mercy, specifically to his devotees. So sixth canto is primarily describing about Poshanam, where You have the episodes of Ajamil. I mean, to what extent the Lord can go to define a devotee? Once he took my name, but he was addressing his son. Still, the Vishnudutas came promptly to protect Ajamil. That is the extent the Lord can, dilute the definition of a devotee. Once he takes my name, fine, no problem. Okay, and we see the episode of Vritrasur. Whatever body the devotee may be in, I protect. So Vritrasur was in a demoniac body. The Lord says, doesn't matter, I will still protect that devotee. Someone may, and we also see the episode of Indra. I mean, mixed devotee. He is not even a pure devotee. He has a demigod body, but then he is a mixed devotee. Doesn't matter. Even Indra is protected as long as some devotion is there. So, the sixth canto primarily emphasizes on this point of poshanam, how the Lord nourishes. He not only protects, but he nourishes the devotion also of his devotees. Then, he talks about Manvantarani Saddharma. Of course, Manvantara is attributed to the 8th canto. And in the list also, Manvantara comes before, after Uti only. Utaya Karma Vasana. He says, Uti means Karma Vasana. Karma Vasana means how specific impressions impel a person to act in a particular way. Samskaras drive a person to act in a particular way. So this is described in the 7th canto primarily through the lives of Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad Maharaj. How Prahlad Maharaj, he got very favorable impressions right from the womb of his mother. Okay, he could hear Krishna Katha from Narada Muni. And then when he came out, I mean, one could see his activities, which were like pure devotional activities right from a very young age. Utaya Karma Vasana. You know, favorable samskaras, favorable impressions, very favorable activities. On the other hand, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, they were born due to a very unfavorable union, okay, between Kashyapa and Diti, and at a very inauspicious time, with very inauspicious consciousness. So therefore, those samskaras impelled them to act in a very demoniac way. So favorable samskaras, favorable activities. Unfavorable samskaras, unfavorable activities. That is Uti. And the last 5 chapters of 7th canto, where Narada Muni describes to Yudhishthira Maharaj about Varnashram, is basically, this whole Varnashram is a system which facilitates Uti. Uti means actions impelled by impressions. So, different people have different impressions. Some have impressions of a Brahmana, some have impressions of a Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, and so on. And naturally, anyway, everyone is going to act according to their impressions only. Sadrisham Cheshtate Swasya Prakritir Jnanavanapi Prakritim Yanti Bhutani Nigraha Kim Karishyati. Krishna says that anyway, everyone is going to act according to their nature, or the nature that they have acquired through impressions. Nigraha kim karishyati? What can repression accomplish? This is what Krishna says. And Varnashram identifies this. Yes, you cannot force a person beyond a limit to act against his nature. So there must be some facility by which the living entities can act according to their nature, at the same time progress in their spiritual pursuits. So therefore Krishna says, okay, the Varnashram system is that system where duties which are very much according to the impressions that a living entity has acquired, so only such duties are given to all living entities. And because it is sanctioned by the Supreme Lord, performance of duties according to one's own psychophysical nature is purifying. Whereas if one acts whimsically according to his nature, that's not purifying. Okay? So therefore, this whole description of Varnashram is in itself a system which is based on this principle of Uti. Uti means the principle of actions impelled by impressions. Then, Manvantarani Saddharma. So, the sixth topic is Manvantara. So, what is this topic of Manvantara? So, we all know that the day of Brahma is divided into 1000 Chaturyugas. So, in 1000 Chaturyugas, we have 14 Manus. Under each Manu, there are like 71.25 Chaturyugas or something like that. Okay. So, and it is mentioned that during each Manvantara, there are six personalities who take care of that particular Manvantara. You have the Manu, you have the Manuputras, who are the sons of Manu. Then you have Manvantara avatar. Every Manvantara has a particular avatar who takes care of the functioning of that Manvantara. Then there are the Sapta Rishis. The seven Rishis, it's a post. And at each Manvantara, a different set of seven sages, they hold that post. And then Indra. Indra changes after every Manvantara. Bali Maharaj would be the next Indra. The current Indra, his name is Purandara. Next Indra would be Bali Maharaj. And then the Devatas. Okay. So these six people, they change after every Manvantara. So Manvantarani Saddharma. The topic of Manvantara means how in each Manvantara these six people ruled. That's how in other Puranas it would be described. But in Bhagavatam, if you see how it is described in the 8th canto, 8th canto starts with Parikshit Maharaj asking Shukadeva Goswami, "My dear Lord, at the beginning of 3rd canto, I asked you to describe to me about the genealogical line of Swayambhuva Manu, who was the first Manu. In response to that, you spoke 3rd canto, 4th canto, 5th canto, 6th canto. 4 cantos were genealogical line of Swayambhuva Manu only." He says, "But what I didn't tell you is, I have a desire to hear about all the 14 Manus. There are 14 Manus in a day of Brahma. I have a desire to hear about all of them. So would you please speak about the other Manus also?" So then he starts describing about the Swayambhuva Manu, Chakshusha Manu, and Swarochisha. And all the 14 Manus he speaks. But in speaking about these Manus, what he does is, he describes some activities of the Manvantara avatars. Like Gajendra Moksha. So Gajendra Moksha happened during the second Manu. So he says that during this Manvantara, Lord Hari, he was the Manvantara avatar, and the prominent pastime that he performed was Gajendra Moksha. Then Parikshit Maharaj says, "Oh, this Gajendra Moksha, it's such a wonderful pastime. I would really want to hear about this Gajendra Moksha." And then 3 chapters, Shukadeva Goswami speaks about Gajendra Moksha. Then he speaks about the next Manu, and then the next Manu. During the 4th Manu, he says that during this Manvantara, Lord Ajita, he was the Manvantara avatar. And the prominent pastime that he performed was the Samudra Manthan. He says, "Oh, the Samudra Manthan, such a wonderful pastime. I would really want to know the details of this pastime." And this whole Samudra Manthan Leela continues. Like that, every single pastime that's described in the 8th canto are the pastimes of a particular Manvantara avatar. That's how the Manvantara is attributed to the 8th canto. So then, Avataranu charitam hareschasyanu vartinam pumsami shakata prokta nanakhyanopabrahmitaha. Ishakataha or Ishanukata refers to Harehe avatara anucharitam. Ishanu Katha means descriptions of the Lord's avataras. Cha asya anuvartinam pumsam. And also descriptions of the stories of their devotees. Devotees of these avataras. Of course, we may say that throughout Bhagavatam, it is either stories of the Supreme Lord or his devotees. But Ishanukatha means there is another characteristic of Ishanukatha, which means Nana Akhyana Upabrahmita. Upabrahmita means it is filled with Nana Akhyana, many, many small, small stories. If you see, which canto has many, many small, small stories? Ninth canto. So, Ishanukatha is attributed primarily to ninth canto. Nana Akhyana Upabrahmita. So, we have seen how many topics till now? 7 topics. Atra Sargo, Visargascha, Sthanam, Poshanam, Utaya, Manvantara, Ishanukatha. 3 more topics remain. So he says, Nirodasyanushayanam Atmanasaha Shaktibihi Muktir Hitvanyata Rupam Swarupena Vyavastitihi. Nirodo Atmanaha Anushayanam. Niroda refers to the merging of the Jiva Saha Shaktibihi along with his material identity. We saw yesterday when after dissolution, the living entity enters into the body of Mahavishnu, and along with him, his identity also goes in. Matlab, separated, gross and subtle body is separated, that also enters the body of Mahavishnu. That is one kind of Nirodha, but there are other kinds of Nirodha also. Different types of dissolution is described in the 12th canto. So, Nirodha is attributed to the 12th canto. Muktir hitva anyata rupam swarupena vyavastitihi. And mukti, which is the ninth topic, is attributed to the 11th canto, which through various wonderful discussions like Nimi Maharaj's discussion with Navayogendras and Krishna's describing Uddhava Gita to Uddhava, through these wonderful descriptions, the aspect of mukti is brought forth. But mukti here means hitva anyata rupam swarupena vyavastitihi. Anyata rupam means any other designations. Okay? Any other upadis. Sarvopadi vinirmuktam. And then situating oneself in one swarupa. Jivera swarupai Krishnera Nityadas. So that is mukti. That is described through these various wonderful narrations in the 11th canto. So, now we have seen 9 topics. The 10th topic remains to be seen. So, this verse talks about the 10th topic. Abhasascha nirodascha yatostyadyavasiyate sa ashraya param brahma paramatmeti shabdyate. Saha ashraya. That person is called ashraya. Yato asti adyavasiyate. From whom arise abhasascha nirodascha. Abhasa is creation, sarga. Nirodha is the last topic, last of the 9 topics. Abhasascha nirodascha, which means abhasa adi nirodha anta, which means all in between. So, ashraya is that person from whom sarga, visarga, sthanam, poshanam, uti and all these 9 topics arise. That is called ashraya. That Bhagavan is called ashraya. Param brahma paramatma iti shabdyate. And that personality is also called paramatma and brahman. Okay. By some people who have a different set of qualifications. Their understanding of absolute truth is Paramatma, or some other people, their understanding of absolute truth is Brahman. Okay. So, Abhasascha Nirodascha Yato Asti Adyavasiyate. That person who is the source. Of course, some of these aspects The Lord is literally the source also. Like Janmadhyasyatah, this universe and all these things literally come out from the Lord. But some of these other topics are there for the sole purpose of glorifying the Supreme Lord. In that sense, he is the source. So that person who gives shelter to all these other nine topics, that Bhagavan is Ashraya Tattva, and that Bhagavan is also called Brahma and Paramatma. Okay? So that is the 10th topic. So now, in the next two verses, this Ashraya Tattva is going to be explained by stating an example. We saw that Ashraya Tattva is, who is Ashraya Tattva? Krishna, Bhagavan. But it is mentioned that Paramatma and Brahman, they are also Bhagavan only, their various features. So they are also Ashraya Tattva only. So now, in the next two verses, taking the example of Paramatma, how Paramatma is the Ashraya Tattva is explained, just for our better understanding. Okay? So, that is 8th and 9th verses. So in the 8th verse, Sukadeva Goswami says, Yodhyatmiko yam purusha sosav evadi daivikah yastatrobaya vicheda purushohyadi bautikah. This is a very cryptic verse. He says, Yaha adhyatmiko yam purusha. First I will state the literal meaning of this verse, then we will see the explanation. First he says the literal meaning is Yodhyatmikoyam purusha sosav eva adidaivikah. The adhyatmik purusha is non-different from the adidaivik purusha. Yes, tatra ubaya vichedah purushohi adibautikah. And this adibautik purusha is also non-different from the other two. So now, we thought Sukadeva Goswami was going to explain the Ashraya Tattva. It seems like he is introducing a whole new Tattva only here. He is talking about some Adhyatmik Purusha, Adibhautik Purusha, Adidaivik Purusha. So, who are these three other Purushas? And why is all of a sudden Sukadeva Goswami speaking about these three Purushas here? So, we saw that the living entity is covered with three different types of coverings. Okay, the adhyatmic covering, adibhautic covering, and the adidaivic covering. Okay, what is the adhyatmic covering? Anyone remembers? What is called adhyatma? The subtle body. The subtle body, the subtle covering is called the adhyatmic covering. What is the adibhautic covering? The gross body is the adibhautik covering. And what is the adidaivik covering? Behind controlling this adhyatmik and adibhautik coverings is the body of sense devatas, GBC, governing body. Okay, so that's the adidaivik covering. So like that, there are three coverings. And at different instances, the living entity unconsciously identifies with one or more of these coverings. Sometimes he feels, Prabhupada writes, sometimes he feels he is the controller. Which means he is identifying with the adidaivik covering. Sometimes he is identifying with the subtle body, which means he is identifying with the adhyatmic layer. Sometimes he is identifying with the gross body, which means he is identifying with the adibhautik layer. So here, all these three are addressed as Purushas because of the misidentification of the living entity. Actually, they are not Purushas. In fact, even the living entity himself is not a Purusha. He is Prakriti only. But the living entity thinks he is Purusha. First mistake. Second, he thinks he as a Purusha is this body. That is the second mistake. Okay. So therefore, these three layers are addressed as Purushas, probably in a sarcastic way, but they are not actually Purushas. So here it is mentioned that there is this Adhyatmik Purusha, there is this Adhidaivik Purusha, and there is this Adhibhautik Purusha, but they are non-different. How are they non-different? Gross body is gross body, subtle body is subtle body, gross body is not subtle body. How are they non-different? In Krishna, okay, that's one understanding. All are material, okay. Gross body is coming from subtle body, okay. Anything else? All belong to the Virat Purusha, okay, all that is fine. But in this case, what it means is, all three have the same purpose. What is the purpose? To give sense gratification to spirit soul. That is the purpose of all the three Purushas. They cooperatively work to fulfill that desire of the living entity. I want to enjoy. Okay, the Adhibhautik Purusha, the Adhyatmik Purusha, and the Adhidaivik Purusha, they cooperate and they give that sense gratification to the living entity. So, in that sense, all three are non-different. Like for example, one may say that, you know, I want to reach, I don't remember, if you reach... Howda station, then in order to come to temple you have to cross Ganga, right? Something like that. So, and there could be a route which can bypass Ganga also. No, there is no route. Okay, wrong example. Okay, anyway, you know, we may say that, you know, to go to a particular place you can either go by bus or you can go by train or you can go by rickshaw. I mean, in one say, we may ask, Arik, should I go by train, bus or rickshaw? Someone may say, kuch farak nahi padta. It's all the same. It's actually not all the same. It's different. One is train, another is rickshaw, another is bus. But in one sense, doesn't matter, all three will take you to your destination. In that sense, they are same. So here, when it is mentioned, so when a particular statement is made, there is a particular sense in which that statement should be understood. Okay. So the person who speaks that statement, he knows in what sense he intends that statement to be interpreted. So here, when Shukadeva Goswami says that this Adhyatmik Purusha, Adhibhautik Purusha and the Adhidaivik Purusha are non-different, he doesn't mean in the sense constitutionally they are non-different. Here he means in purpose they are non-different. The purpose of creation of all these three Purushas is to facilitate the enjoyment of the living entity in this material world. Okay. So then in the next verse he says, Ekam ekata rabhave yada nopalabhamahe tritayam tatrayo veda sa atma swashraya shrayah. So this is, I have heard His Grace Radhesham Prabhu also quote this verse many times to establish who is the real ashraya. So he says, Ekam ekatara abhave yada na upalabhamahe. In the absence of one of these Purushas, the other two cannot accomplish their goals also. If one of these three Purushas are not cooperating, let's take for an example, the eyeballs is which Purusha? Adhibhautik Purusha. Okay? And the subtle eye, or you can say the optic nerves that connect the brain to the retina, you can say that is something like Adhyatmik Purusha. If those optic nerves are little bit damaged, even though physically you may see beautiful eyeballs, but still that person cannot see properly. So in the absence of adhyatmik purusha, adhibhautik purusha also cannot function, which means he cannot fulfill the purpose for which he was created. If both are good, but if Surya Dev is displeased for some reason, then also, you know, that cannot be accomplished. So, ekam ekatara abhave yada na upalabhamahe. In the absence of cooperation or in the absence of one of these three purushas, the other two purushas are also rendered ineffective. Which means for their functioning, each of these purushas is dependent on each other. Most importantly, these purushas are dependent on one very important purusha, that is the living entity. They are dependent on the living entity. If the living entity leaves that body, the adhyatmik purusha, adhibhautik purusha and adhidaivik purusha, even if they may want to cooperate, it will not produce any result. Okay. So, ekam, so basically what here Shukadeva Goswami is trying to mention is, even though these three are mentioned as purushas, but they are not independent. For their functioning, they are interdependent and ultimately they are also dependent on the soul. Ekam ekatara abhave yadana upalabhamahe tritayam tatra yoveda sa atma. And who is this atma? This atma, for his enjoyment, is not dependent on the three purushas. They are dependent on the atma. But if atma wants to enjoy, he does not actually need these three purushas constitutionally. He does not need these three purushas for his enjoyment. Okay? But it is not that this atma is also completely independent. He is not dependent on the three purushas, but he is dependent on the Paramatma. Upadrashta Anumanta, he has to sanction ultimately. Okay. So that Paramatma is Swa-Ashraya Ashraya. Who is the Ashraya of that Paramatma? He is his own Ashraya. So this is how, by establishing a hierarchy, Shukadeva Goswami is establishing who is this Ashraya Tattva. Because he mentioned that Ashraya Tattva is Bhagavan and he is also called Brahman and Paramatma. So as an example, he takes Paramatma as the Ashraya Tattva. He says, I will establish how Paramatma is the Ashraya Tattva. You see that for the functioning of, or for sense gratification, these three purushas are there. These three purushas are interdependent, and on top of that they are dependent on the soul. But the soul is not dependent on the other three purushas, but the soul is dependent on super soul. On whom is the super soul dependent? No one. Swa-ashraya. It is his own shelter. That's how he establishes the ashraya tattva of super soul. But of course, here in the purport, Both Srila Prabhupada and Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explain that that even though it is mentioned that the super soul is its own shelter, that is in one sense, but in the ultimate sense, the super soul is dependent on Bhagavan. Ekam shena stito jagat. Krishna says that this super soul is also one of my amshas. Eka amshena, in my one expansion as super soul, I maintain this whole universe. So, in terms of, you know, it comes in Ishvara Tattva and Jiva Tattva. Okay. In that sense, Paramatma is Ishvara Tattva, therefore he has no other shelter. But even within Ishvara Tattva, if you see, the existence of Paramatma depends on the existence of Bhagavan. In that sense, Bhagavan is the ashraya. Like that, it is described here. So in that sense, the 10 characteristics of a Puran has been described by Srila Shukadeva Goswami in this first 9 verses. Maybe we can take one or two questions, if at all, if there is any question, one or two questions we can take. Yes, please. See, what constitutes subtle body is mind, intelligence, and when we say ahankar, of course, that's the wrong identification also. On top of that, it includes the other products of ahankar, subtle, like, it's part of the subtle eye, the subtle ear, the subtle nose, the subtle sense of touch. It's all part of that body, which includes mind and intelligence also, and chitta. It's all part of subtle body. Subtle sense organs are the subtle eye, the subtle ears, these are subtle sense organs. Mind, intelligence, false ego and chitta, they are called antakarana. They are also subtle. No, they come. When we say jnanendriyas, karmendriyas, they are not gross organs. They are subtle organs only. They are not gross organs. Gross organs come in adibhuta. They are covered in the elements. Okay. So jnanendriyas, karmendriyas are subtle organs only. They are not gross organs. Okay, one last question, then we will move on. Nirodha. What's the question? Nirodha is 12th canto. Various kinds of dissolutions are described in the 12th canto. Okay. Okay, we'll continue. So now, another topic that Shukadev Goswami promised that he will answer. Anyone remembers? In the previous chapter, he mentioned that I will answer this particular question of yours. Which was that question? Anyone remembers? About the material form of the Lord. Because Parikshit Maharaj had asked that actually you mentioned about this Purusha who has all the various planets as the limbs of his body. Are there any more details to it? He wanted to know a little more about it. So now we are going to see the third description of universal form. As I mentioned, there are different descriptions which may seem similar, but the purpose of that description is different. Till now we have seen two descriptions. Can someone recollect the purpose of the first description of universal form? Yes, Prabhu. Turn and the Virat Purusha. Where was, when did we see the second description? Sixth chapter. What was the purpose of that description? Yeah, to establish how the Lord is both the material and effective cause of this universe. So now we are going to see a third description of universal form, because Parikshit Maharaj had asked that are there any more details to this Virat Roop manifestation. So now Shukadev Goswami is going to give a very important principle. What is the cause of creation of this Virat Roop? That's what he is going to mention. What is the cause? When he says what is the cause of creation of Virat Roop, what he means is, what is the cause of creation of individual bodies also? Because whenever he is going to speak about Virat Purusha, he also is going to mean individual living entities, bodies also. So this third description of the Virat Roop is going to explain this very important principle of how desires design our body, both gross and subtle. Okay. So therefore, in this description of Virat Roop, you will see something like this. And then, the Virat Purusha desired to eat good foodstuff. Then, it will say that then his gross tongue manifested first. The gross tongue. And then in that gross tongue, Varunadev, who is the sense devata of taste, and the subtle tongue manifested in that gross tongue. And then the sense objects were created. The sense object is taste was created. And then it will say, and then the Virat Roop desired to see objects. So first the gross eyes manifested. And in that gross eyes, Suryadev and the subtle eye Chakshu, they manifested. And then the sense object of form was created. This will be the kind of description that we will be seeing now. And the purpose of this description is to show whether it is Virat Roop or individual living entities, it is the desire which designs their subtle and gross body. That is the purpose of this description. This is a very important point regarding the Virat Roop creation that Shukadev Goswami wants to emphasize here. How it is the desires of the living entities is the cause of this material universe. Because when you say the Virat Roop desired, is it a real statement or a figurative statement? It's a figurative statement, because there is nothing called Virat Purusha. So when Shukadev Goswami says, when Virat Roop desired, it means the sum total of all living entities, their desires manifest this various things that we see in this material world, including their own bodies. That's what it means. That's how the Vaishnavas understand. It doesn't literally mean that this gigantic Purusha actually, you know, desired. It's not like that. Yes, bro. You came late? You didn't hear the disclaimer, I think. Okay, you can ask. The universal form is unreal in the sense, not that the ingredients are unreal. What constitutes the universal form is not unreal. To think that a particular personality, he owns all these, matlab, as parts of his body, that imagination is unreal. Like for example, sometimes one may go out, yes, I don't know if it's possible anymore in Calcutta, but if you go to a nice place where it's not surrounded so much by buildings, okay, on a nice cloudy day, you just lie down and then look up, you see so many cloud formations, okay. So at a particular point, it looks like a person riding a horse, okay, the cloud formation. So you may say, look, look, a person is riding a horse. Okay? So is it real or unreal? It's unreal. What is unreal? There is no person riding a horse. Okay? But is the cloud itself unreal? Cloud is not unreal. But to think that cloud is a person riding a horse is an unreal imagination. In that sense, Virat Roop is unreal. So what constitutes the Virat Roop is very much real. But to think that a Purusha owns all that, or it all are the various bodily limbs of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that conception is unreal. That is imaginary. Yeah. Correct. Yeah. Yeah. So, no. It is not a real form. Because if you look at the fifth chapter, it is again and again it is mentioned, Kalpayanti. Wise people imagine the various planets to be belonging to the various limbs of the Supreme Lord. And then another verse says, Itiva Loka Kalpana. And thus people imagine the various planetary systems to be belonging to this Supreme Purusha. No. I mean, at least I have not read about it like that. It's an imagination, but it is an imagination which is favorable for some people. For some people, that kind of an imagination is favorable for their progress in spiritual life. But all said and done, it's an imagination only. Because the Lord does not... So therefore it is mentioned, the Acharya has mentioned that when there are descriptions as to, you know, the Virat Roop manifested. Okay. Garbhodak Sai Vishnu entered and then the Virat Roop manifested. When Vaishnavas read it, they understand Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu entered and then the universe manifested. For them, there is no... According to them, there is nothing called Virat Purusha. There is... Bhagavatam to Bhagavad Gita. So for them there is nothing called Virat Purusha. Okay. So they when they read it, they understand as the universe manifested and not the Virat Purusha manifested. So I had something in mind, but I just got a little distracted. Yeah, exactly. So that's what I wanted to comment on. When Arjuna sees, So it is like when you go into a, I gave this example before, when you go into a 3D theater, don't go, but hypothetically I am assuming. So if, but you must have probably gone into, Ratyatra Pandal, you have a 3D theater, okay. So, in that, what, you give 3D goggles, right? So 3D goggles you wear. And what happens when you wear the 3D goggles? Yeah, 3D movie means what happens really? It seems like very real, right? But why that is not visible when the goggles are not worn? So our vision is defective. So when you wear the 3D goggles, you get a 3D vision. To see what? Is it 3D reality? Correct, but it's not reality, right? It seems like reality. Like I remember long time back when I saw a 3D movie. So, you know, all kinds of fruits, ice cream and everything, people are trying to catch it, you know, like that. For a person who is not wearing goggles, you know, they are wondering what's happening here. What these people are trying to do, he's not able to see anything. Okay. And these people, after wearing goggles also, they are getting to see something, But what they are seeing is also not real. So just because Krishna gave that vision to Arjuna does not mean it was a real form. It is just like you are giving goggles to someone so that they can see that 3D illusion only. It's not 3D reality. You know, it's so if Krishna can create illusion, then Krishna can as well give you a vision to see that illusion also. See, I don't. See, what I'm trying to emphasize here is when at least somewhere the scriptures say that this universal form is imaginary. Now, so, correct. So I would, okay, we will get back to this topic because I would suggest that you go back to 2nd Canto 5th chapter and read the last 3-4 verses and then we will get back to the discussion. 2.5 point, last three four verses. Read those verses. Read Prabhupada's purport. Read the commentary of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, and then we'll resume the discussion offline. So, the purpose of first Virat Roop was to describe what should a yogi who is qualified for Virat Roop meditation, he should know what he should meditate on. So for that purpose, the first Virat Roop was described. Okay. So then, now he is going to describe the second topic of, as we saw, the third description of Virat Roop. The purpose of this description is how desires give rise to gross and subtle bodies. Okay. Purusho andam vinirbidya yada sausa vinirgatah atmano ayanam anvichan aposrakshi shuchi shuchihi yada saha shuchihi purushah. When the pure purusha andam vinirbidya, separating himself from the universe, vinirgatah, remained outside. Remained outside here, is it literal or figurative? First thing, who is this Purusha who is being described here? Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu. Okay. So when that pure Purusha, separating himself from the universe, remained outside, desiring a place to lie down in the universe. So when, after, this is the time when all the elements were created and they were bound together in the form of a golden globe, and that golden globe was floating on the Karanodaka ocean, you remember? And then Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu enters that universe and gives it life. This is the second canto of chapter description. But before that, something else happened. As soon as Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu entered that universe, he thought, where do I stay? Like, as soon as you go somewhere, okay, where is my room? So he was wondering, where do I stay? So what did he do? Atmano ayanam anvichan shuchihi apaha asrakshit. Shuchihi apaha means pure waters. So he created the Garbhodaka ocean out of his own sweat. Okay? So the spherical universe, the lower hemisphere, was completely filled with the Garbhodaka water, and then he laid down on that water. So here, very interesting purport. that Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur mentions here. People might ask, why so much discussion about the Virat Roop? This is Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. You know, he has understood what we are thinking, so he is presenting. Why so much description about the Virat Roop? Why not narrate the sweet pastimes of the Leela Avataras? Again, one more description. What is this? This is true. He says, correct. Humko Leela Avatar katha hi sunna chahiye. But who is qualified to hear the pure pastimes of the Lord? Only the pure devotees are qualified. But those who are engrossed in sense gratification cannot be woken up through pure pastimes. So those who are engrossed in sense gratification cannot be woken up through pure pastimes. Therefore, the most merciful Srimad Bhagavatam constantly plays some tricks to wake them up. And one of the tricks is description of the Virat Roop. Just as a person haunted by a ghost is revived by the ghost mantra, similarly, people sleeping on the lap of Maya can be woken up only through topics related to Maya. And this has already been explained in the last verse of 7th chapter of 2nd canto. Mayam varanayato amushya ishwarasyanumodataha shrinvata shraddaya nityam mayayatmana muyyati. Srimad Bhagavatam, being most merciful, also describes the Brahman feature and the Paramatma feature in order to produce bhakti in all kinds of practitioners. Okay, so, and he gives another very nice logic to understand this. He says that Krishna is completely full of sweetness in his form, qualities and pastimes. Krishna is full of sweetness in his all form, qualities and pastimes, and he possesses dharma, jnana, bala, aishwarya and all such wonderful qualities. And Krishna also contains all the avataras and his other features such as Brahman and Paramatma also. So if the word Krishna indicates all these various expansions and his other features such as Brahman and Paramatma, Bhagavatam, being a form of Krishna, must also have descriptions of all these other forms, expansions of Krishna. So therefore, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, therefore everything is consistent. Therefore one should not say that Bhagavatam should have descriptions of only 10th canto. Why Brahman is described, why Paramatma is described, you know, these things should not be described. One should not think like that. Because one of the two reasons he gives, he says that different people are qualified for understanding different aspects of the absolute truth. So therefore, in order to attract those people also to bhakti, such descriptions are given. That is one purpose. The second purpose that is given is that because the Lord Krishna includes all his expansions such as various avataras and also the Brahman and Paramatma, therefore Bhagavatam, being a form of Krishna, must also have descriptions of all these various avataras and Brahman and Paramatma. For these reasons, there are descriptions of Brahman and Paramatma also in Bhagavatam. So therefore, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, therefore everything is consistent, which means there is nothing incongruent in Bhagavatam having such descriptions like that. Okay, just one or two more verses and then we'll take a break.
Tasvavatsitsvasrishtasu sahasram parivatsaran tena narayano nama yadapapurushodbhavah.
So now he is giving a description of how the word Narayan came. Nara means
Nara means human being. Okay, that Nara is the Lord. And Naraha means that which emanates from Nara. So what emanated from Nara? The Garbhodaka ocean. Naraha emanated from Nara. And he is lying down, Ayana, on that Naraha. Therefore he is called Narayana. Like that. So he dwelled for many years in that water created from himself. Because of that he is called Narayana. Why? Yad apaha purushodbhava. Because he lied down in that water that emanated from the Purusha, Nara. So therefore the water was called Nara. So Naraha Ayana Narayana, like that. So then,
Dravyam karma cha kalascha swabhavo jiva eva cha yadanugrahata santi nasanti yadupekshaya.
So all the various things, Dravya, Karma, Kala, Swabhava, Jiva, these five we saw were the ingredients of this material universe. So whatever you see in this material universe is made of these five ingredients. He says that only because of the connection with the Supreme Lord do all these various elements display their characteristics. Salt is salty because the Lord as the super soul is there in that salt, empowering it to be salty. Sugar is sweet because the Lord as Paramatma is there in that sugar, empowering that sugar to be sweet. Even though all these are inanimate, they are not consciously doing, but even inanimate objects need the empowerment of the Supreme Lord in the form of Paramatma. So Paramatma is not only empowering animate living entities of this material world, even the inanimate objects are empowered by Paramatma only. So that's what Shukadeva Goswami in one of his last prayers, he mentions, Bhutair Mahadbir Yayima Puro Vibhu Nirmaya Shete Yadamushu Purushaha Bhungter Gune Gunan Shodasha Shodashatmakaha Solankrishishta Bhagavan Vacham Sime. So he mentions that, my dear Lord, just like you enter each one of these elements and empowers and gives it life. Gives them life means what? Allows them to act according to their constitutional nature. That is the meaning of giving them life. Actually, they don't have any life. They are achetana vastu. But still they have life in the sense they are allowed to act according to their constitutional nature. That is because the Lord enters and empowers them to act in that way. So he says that similarly, my dear Lord, you enter my words and empower it. Like that he is offering this prayer. So here it is mentioned, Yad anugrahatah santi. Only because of the entry of the Supreme Lord, all this dravya, kala, karma, swabhava, jiva, all of them are able to act according to their nature only because they are empowered by the Supreme Lord. Indicating that the Lord is the efficient cause of this universe. Later. Now it's break time. We can take questions during break time.
Eko nanatva manvichan yoga talpat samuttitah Viryam hiranmayam devo mayaya vyasrijatrida adidaivam mata adhyatmyam adibhutam iti prabhuhu.
So we'll take one part at a time. Sometimes the verses are split in a slightly
So here it is mentioned, Eko Nanatvam Anvichan.
So we were discussing on this point that sometimes the acharyas split the verses also slightly differently. So one of the examples is here. Ekaha nanatvam anvichan. This is what I was mentioning yesterday also. When the scriptures talk about the one Lord desiring to become many, it generally refers to a time just before creation. So this is one of the examples that we see in Bhagavatam. Ekaha devaha nanatvam anvichan. The one Lord desiring to become many, yoga talpat samuttitaha. He rose up from the sleep of universal destruction. Vyasrajat viryam hiranmayam mayaya trida. And he created this universe which was shining brightly in three forms by his energy. What are these three forms? Adidaivam ata adhyatmyam adibhutam iti prabhu. The adhyatmic layer, the adibhautic layer and the adidaivic layer. We already saw these three purushas, what do they mean? Okay. So, here in this description, there is a jumbling up of chronology. This is not what he is mentioning here, is that it's not meant to be a chronologically perfect description. Because a chronologically perfect description has already been described by Shukadeva Goswami by quoting the conversation between Brahma and Narada in the second canto, 5th chapter. A perfect chronological description of the creation of the material universe was already given. And sometimes, if you can think about it, sometimes when we, after speaking a subject matter, when we summarize, the purpose is to sort of recollect various important points. And we may not present it again in a very chronological way also. So the same way here, Shukadeva Goswami is summarizing the descriptions of creation. And somehow it's not chronological. But the acharyas explain, okay, the right chronology is what was described in the second canto, 5th chapter. And this just being a summary is not sticking to that chronological description. Okay. So the one Lord desiring to become many, this one Lord refers to? Karanodakasai Vishnu. From whose body does all the living entities come out? Karanodakasai Vishnu. So the one Lord desiring to become many rose from his bed after the sleep of universal destruction. So universal destruction, we saw, you would have seen it in the third canto, I don't know. When it was time for waking up, Maya Shakti go and wakes up the Supreme Lord, and then it's time for creation again. And then the Lord wakes up, and then he glances at Prakriti and impregnates Prakriti with all the living entities. Okay. So therefore, whenever scriptures talk about the one Lord desiring to become many, in general, it refers to a time prior to creation, when it was just time for creation, the Lord desired to become many, which means he is going to impregnate Pradhan with the living entities. One last verse and then we will break. Ataikam paurusham viryam trida vidyata tachrunu. How this one shining Purusha divided into these three forms, I am going to describe to you right now. That is going to be the description of this universal form. That's what we are going to see now. So this description of the universal form would be the Virat Purusha desired, and then from that Virat Purusha, in that Virat Purusha, the gross tongue manifested, then the subtle organ and the sense devata manifested, and the sense object manifested, like that. But the purpose is to indicate how desires give rise to one's gross and subtle body, like that. So we'll take a break now and we'll convene back at 10:55. Srila Prabhupada ki. So,
pranenakshipatakshutrit antara jayate viboho pipasato jakshatascha pranmukam nirabidyata.
Pranenakshipata, being stimulated by the sutra, are being stimulated by the prana shakti. One of the ways in which we can understand that the prana shakti is weak is if one does not feel hungry. So if one does not feel very hungry, then it's also an indication that the prana vayu is not doing its job properly. So here it is mentioned, being stimulated by the sutra. Sutra here refers to the prana. Being stimulated by the sutra, hunger and thirst appeared within the universal form. He desired to drink and eat. So after hunger and thirst appeared, he desired to drink and eat. Prak mukam nirabhidyata. First the mouth became distinct. Okay. Mouth here refers to the gross mouth.
Mukatastalu nirbinnam jihva tatropa jayate. Tato nana raso jagnye jihvaya yodigamyate.
After the appearance of mouth, of course, mouth is the place of organ, and inside that the gross tongue is mentioned here as talu, palate. And then from that, on that, varuna and the subtle tongue, they manifested. And then finally, nana rasa, various tastes manifested. The first the gross organ, then subtle organ and sense devata, and then the sense object.
Vivakshor mukato bumno vaknir vagvyahritam tayoho jale vaitasya suchiram nirodas samajayata nasike nirabhidyetam dhodu yati nabasvati tatravayurgandavaho grano nasi jigrakshatah.
When the universal form desired to speak, because the tongue is simultaneously both the Gyanendriya and Karmendriya. As Karmendriya, it performs the act of speaking. And the sense devata of speech is Agnidev. So first the gross tongue has already manifested. So then in that Agnidev and the ability to speak, Vag, they manifested. And then the sense object of speech also manifested after that. Then when the form resided in the water for a long time, form here refers to the universe or the universal form. The universe was resting on the Karanodaka ocean. Okay, inside there is Garbhodaka waters, outside there is Karanodaka water. Obstruction appeared from the universal form. When the life air became active, the two nostrils became differentiated. He has to breathe. So the two nostrils became differentiated. When the universal form desired to smell, Vayu, who carries fragrance, and the nose appeared there. Here nose refers to the subtle nose. Nostrils have already become manifested. So in that, Vayu is not here the sense devata, but Vayu is called Gandavaha, carrier of fragrance. Okay. So Vayu generally carries various sense objects. So one of the sense objects that he carries is fragrance. Vayu or Ganda Nivashayat, it is mentioned. So the sense devata is actually Ashwini Kumaras, even though it's not explicitly mentioned here, but they were also created.
Yadatmani niralokam atmanam cha didrakshatah nirbinne hyakshini tasya jyotis chakshur gunagraha.
When there was no vision in the universal form, he desired to see. After he desired to see, akshini, the gross eyes manifested, and then jyotihi, here refers to the sun, who is the sense devata, along with chakshu, the subtle organ manifested, then the sense object also of form manifested.
Bodhyamanasya rishibir atmanastaj grikshatah karnau chanirabhidyetam dishashrotram gunagrahah.
When the universal form, interesting, when the universal form desired to understand himself, this indicates what is the purpose of our ears. If not God realization, at least self realization, that is the purpose of ears. Those are the subject matters which are supposed to be heard using the ears. Okay. Atmanah bodhyamanasya jigrikshatah. When the universal form desired to understand himself, tad rishibhi, which is revealed by Vedic sound. Karnav, the two gross ears. First the gross ears, then Dishah, here refers to the Dig Devatas or the Devatas, and Shrotram, Shrotram is the subtle ear they manifested, then sound manifested.
Vastuno mridu katinya lagu gurvoshna sheetatam jagrakshatastvan nirbinna tasyam roma mahiruhaha tatra chantar bahirvatas tvacha labda guno vrataha.
When the universal form desired to experience softness, hardness, lightness, heaviness, you should touch here. Softness, not here. The heart is soft. So when he desired to experience softness, hardness, lightness, heaviness, warmth and coolness, the gross skin became differentiated, along with bodily hairs and plants, and the sense devatas of the hairs. It is mentioned that skin has two functions and two sense devatas. Okay. One is the tactile sense, as Prabhupada writes, the sense of touch. And next is itching, the experience of itch. Also skin only experiences. Okay. Part, but no one is touching now, but still you feel itching, isn't it? So that is one. And then it is mentioned that the trees are the sense devatas of itching. And the sense devata of touch is vayu. Like that.
Hastaururuhatustasya nana karma chikirshaya tayostu balavanindra adanam ubayashrayam.
So gyanendriyas are over, now karmendriyas are manifesting. So it is mentioned that when the universal form desired to perform various activities, okay. See, what it literally means is, when the living entity, see, universal form desiring means the conglomerate of all living entities within a particular universe. Actually, there is no conglomerate. They are not together in that sense. All it means is, it is the desire of the individual living entities that is the cause of creation of this material universe. Like we say, na, why did Krishna create this material universe? Someone asked Prabhupada. And Prabhupada once he replied, you know what? He said, he didn't create, you created. You have heard this? Once Prabhupada said, he didn't create, you created because of your desires. Like that once Prabhupada mentioned. So, in one sense it's true. In one sense it's the Lord who created. But in another sense, it is the desire of the living entity which is the cause of this material universe. So, in that sense, so when the universal form desired to perform various activities, two hands manifested. Here the two hands refers to the actual gross hands. The subtle organ, when it comes to karmendriyas, is the ability to perform. Okay, so the ability to lift is the subtle organ of the hand. The ability to walk is the subtle organ of the feet, and so on. Because sometimes we see that the gross organ is there, but then sometimes it is paralyzed. You see gross hands, but then one side paralysis, the right hand and right leg cannot function like that. Then the sense devata Indra manifested, and then the sense object of hands is Adanam. Adanam means to receive things. Like that.
Gatim jigishatappadau ruruhate bikamikam padbyam yajnasvayam havyam karma bikriyate nrabihi.
When the universal form desired movement, two feet appeared, Then the sense devata yagya appeared, and then the ability to walk, the subtle sense organ appeared, and then what is the sense object? Havyam karma bhik kriyate nribihi. By using that feet, men go about to collect objects for sacrifice. Of course, in today's age, it means going on Nagar Sankirtan.
Niravidyata shishno vai prajanandamritartinaha upastha asit kamanam priyam tad ubayashrayam.
When the universal form desired offspring, sexual pleasure and enjoyment of swarga. Shishnaha refers to the gross organ, the gross reproductive organ, and upastha refers to the subtle organ. Sometimes the ability to procreate is not there. We say that for someone is impotent. So it means the subtle organ is not functioning. Okay, and the pleasure of enjoyment with woman, which is dependent on the sense organ and the devata, that is the sense object that appeared after that.
Utsisrikshorda tumalam nirabidyata vaigudam tatappayustato mitra utsarga ubayashrayah.
When the universal form desired to expel waste products, nirabidyata vaigudam, the gross anus appeared, and tataha payuhu, after that the subtle organ which is called payu, that appeared. Then after that the sense devata mitra. So mitra is not the sense devata of evacuation, it is actually mrityu, as mentioned in one of the previous chapters. But then sometimes Vishnu Chakradhargur mentions, sometimes you have a sense devata and an assisting devata who assists. So here it is mentioned that Mitra is not the main sense devata, but he assists in that process. Like that.
Asisrapso purappurya nabidvaram apanatah tatrapanastato mrityu pritaktvam ubayashrayam.
When the universal form desired to go from one body to another body, which means transmigration, through the path of apana and prana, guess which gross organ manifested? Nabidwara. When you see a woman, when you see a child born, what is it that is connecting the child to the mother? Umbilical cord. Umbilical cord is connected to navel, nabidwara. So, interesting here, it is mentioned that the gross organ that facilitates transmigration is nabidwara. And the sense organ, apana. So, apana is the cause of death. So, and the devata is mrityu. And then the sense, the sense object is actually transmigration, which is called death. That manifested.
Aditso rannapana nam asan kukshyantra nadayah nadya samudraschatayos tushti pustishtadashraye.
When the universal form desired to take in food and drink, like sometimes when we look at some sweet, let's say rasgulla or son papadi, we desire to taste it, and sometimes we are hungry, isn't it? We want pacification of our hunger. Okay, so when the universal form desired to taste, tongue has already manifested. Now he wants some nourishment out of food. So then it is mentioned that kukshi means the abdomen, which is the gross organ, and in that abdomen are antara and nadayah. For lack of a proper equivalent, intestines and veins are mentioned. because they are subtle, there is no English equivalent, because probably, I don't know what the modern science, you know, they may call it veins, but nadi is not exactly veins. It's something more subtler than that. And antara is not necessarily, it's not intestines, it's a subtle organ, but because there is no proper equivalent, intestines is used, but you can say it's something like subtle intestines. It's something which helps one absorb the nutrition of food. And nadi is something which is used for absorbing the, whatever you may call it, from water, so that the thirst is quenched. So that is, these are the subtle organs. And the rivers and the oceans, they are the sense, they are sense devatas of veins and intestines. And tushti pushti. Tushti means fullness from food. Pacification of hunger. That is tushti. And pushti is pacification of or quenching of thirst. These are the sense objects. And Prabhupada in the purport writes that the fact that rivers and oceans are the sense devatas for intestines and veins, he says that if anyone has any nervous trouble, you can take bath in a flowing river. Okay, if someone has some nervous related problems. And if someone has indigestion problems, you can take a ocean bath. How far is the ocean from here? 100 kilometers. Okay. If it was little more closer, maybe you could have tried, because that's one of, yeah. Personified. Personified rivers and personified oceans. Each river is a different personality, that is true. Each ocean is also, you can say, but there is one central personality, like that. Okay.
Nididhyasoratmamayam hridayam nirabhidyata tato manaschandra iti sankalpa kama evacha.
Nididhyasoratmamayam. When the universal form desired to contemplate material objects and the illusions concerning himself, hridayam nirabhidyata, heart, which is the gross organ manifested, tataha mana, contemplation is a function of mind, so mind manifested, mind is the subtle organ, chandra is the sense devata, sankalpa and kama. Sankalpa refers to specific desires, and kama refers to general desires, like someone may say, I like sweets, general desire, and specific desire is, you know, I like Bengali sweets, or I like rasgulla, or rasmalai, whatever it may be. That is sankalpa. We'll complete and then we'll take.
Tvak charma mamsa rudira medo majjasti datavaha bhumyaptejo maya sapta prano vyomambu vayubihi.
The seven dhatus known as skin. Tvak is the subtle skin, tvacha. Charma is the gross skin. Mamsa, muscle. Rudira, blood. Medaha, fat. Majja is bone marrow. Asti is bone. So these are the seven dhatus. It is mentioned that they are composed predominantly of earth, water and fire. Bhumi, apo, tejomaya. And the life airs are nourished by air, ether and water. So what we call as prana is actually made of air, ether and water, and these seven dhatus are made of earth, water and fire. So Prabhupada relates in his purport the health of the dhatus, or how well the dhatus are functioning. He is relating it to the proper upkeep of the physical body, and life airs he is connecting to the functioning of the mental health. Okay, so here it is mentioned. Prabhupada writes here in the purport, we see that water is the common element in both the gross and subtle forms of material creation. Okay, so gross is the seven dhatus and subtle is the life air. In both of them, water is the common element. But otherwise, in the gross form, you have earth and fire, and in the subtle form, you have ether and air. Water is the common element between the two. So, Prabhupada writes, therefore, it is the principal element of all five of them. As prana is nourished by sky, water, and air. Prana is nourished by sky is ether, ether, water, and air. What does it mean? Prabhupada writes, therefore, fresh air, regular bath and ample space increases vitality. Vitality means mental stability here. That's what Prabhupada indicates. So to have a very stable mind, one needs fresh air, regular bath and ample space. Sometimes if you are feeling little drowsy or if your mind is not functioning properly, if you take a nice cool bath and then you feel fresh and you can function properly. Same way, in a very claustrophobic, closed environment, you know, it's one's ability to think, or if a desk is very cluttered, to sit there and do any, you know, of course some people are capable of doing that. Some people want a cluttered desk actually to function, but most people probably don't fall in that category. So ample space, regular bath, and what else does Prabhupada say? Fresh air. So that can improve one's mental functioning. And then he says that similarly, fresh produce from earth, fresh water and heat. These three are needed for upkeep of the physical body. Fresh produce from earth, matlab, as fresh as possible from the garden. Anyway, you are getting, you know, when the new temple comes up, maybe fresh produce will come from there. Every day, you know, you can cook for their lordships. And fresh water, okay. Mother Ganga is flowing close by. And heat. Heat refers to both internal and external. Externally, you always saw Prabhupada would always take, you know, massage and sit in the sun. And it also refers to internal heat. Vishwanar, the Jatragni, that should also be functioning properly for the proper upkeep of the physical health. So like that Prabhupada explains.
Gunatmakanyendriyani bhutadi prabhava gunaha manasarva vikaratma buddhir vijnana rupini.
The senses, then he, in this verse is, this is the concluding verse of this description of the universal form. In this he is mentioning about the nature of each one of these elements, senses, mind, etc. He says, Indriyani gunatmakani. What is the nature of senses? The senses naturally gravitate towards sense objects. That is the nature of senses. Indriyani gunatmakani. This is for, otherwise we may say that Indriyani paranyahur indriyebhya param manaha manasastu para buddhir yo buddhe paratastu saha. You know, we may say that how is it possible? The senses must be controlling the sense objects. Mind is the controller of the senses. Intelligence is the controller of mind. The soul is the controller of intelligence. This is for an ideally situated person. Okay? This hierarchy is not a static hierarchy. We all know that. It's a very dynamic hierarchy, especially for two people it is static. One is materialist, the ulta is static actually. Senses control, sense objects control the senses. Senses control the mind, mind controls the intelligence. And the intelligence, you know, digs the grave for the soul. So that is static for out and out materialists. And for perfected transcendentalists, is that hierarchy of soul controlling the intelligence, intelligence controlling the mind, mind controlling the senses, and senses controlling the sense objects. So for sadhakas, it is a highly dynamic hierarchy, depending on association and so many other factors. Sometimes, you know, the forward reaction, sometimes the reverse reaction, you know. Depending on when the proper nice association is there, it's the correct hierarchy. When proper association is not there, or if we are not taking proper advantage of the existing association, then it's the opposite hierarchy. And many times in between we realize and we try to change directions, and it's a big tug of war. So like that. So the senses gravitate to sense objects. The sense objects appear attractive because of false ego. That's why for a hog, something appears very attractive which appears very much disgusting to a human being. Okay? It may be the same soul which has transmigrated from one body to another body, but still, when the nature of the false ego changes, when he has started to identify with a hog's body, then suddenly some other sense object starts becoming very, very attractive. And when the same soul transmigrates to a human body, that very same sense object becomes disgusting. So that's what is mentioned here. Sense objects appear attractive because of false ego. Manas sarva vikaratma. The mind sustains all the changes. Buddhir vijnana rupini. And the main quality of intelligence is discrimination. Of course, these are, you know, very brief mention of the characteristics. It's much more in detail explained in the third canto, Kapiladev's teachings. I think 26th chapter. These characteristics are discussed in more detail. We will take it in detail at that point. Okay. So then he has completed this description of the creation of this Virat Purusha. So now he says, Etat Bhagavato Rupam Stulam Te Vyahritam Maya Mahyadibhischa Varanair Ashtabir Bahiravritam. Te Vyahritam Maya. Who is speaking this? Shukadeva Goswami is speaking to Parikshit Maharaj. He is telling, my dear Parikshit Maharaj, till now I have described to you Etat Bhagavato Stulam Rupam, this gross form of the Supreme Lord, Ashtabir Bahiravritam, which is further covered by 8 layers. 8 layers are Bhumir, Apo, Analo, Vayu, Kam, 5. Then Ahankar, Mahat, Tattva and Pradhan. These are the 8 layers. Of course, Man and Buddhi are part of the Ahankar layer only. Okay? Like that.
Ataparam sukshmatamam avyaktam nirvisheshanam anadimadya nidanam nityam vanmanasaparam.
Ataparam. This is the gross form of this universe. Tulo bhagavato rupe. But besides this, sukshmatamam avyaktam. There is a very subtle invisible form. Just like we have subtle body, the universal form also has a subtle body. Nirvisheshanam, without qualities or form, which means without no gross qualities. You cannot ask what color is the mind, what shape is the intelligence, you know. That kind of qualities they do not have. Nirvisheshanam, of course, here does not mean it has no qualities at all. It means that it has no gross qualities, it has subtle qualities.
Anadi madhya nidanam.
The gross body has a beginning and end, but the subtle body is carried over from one gross body to another body.
And vak manasa param, which is beyond words and mind.
Of course, here from Prabhupada's translation and purport, it seems like Prabhupada is talking about spiritual body. But of course, it will be clarified in the next verse. So here, let me read what Prabhupada says here. Prabhupada's translation I will read. Therefore, beyond this gross manifestation is a transcendental manifestation. See, of course, the word transcendental, if you take the dictionary meaning of transcendental, it's not spiritual. Transcendental means beyond. Like, for example, you can say, mind is transcendental to gross matter. It's not wrong usage. Okay, because mind is subtle. So it is beyond gross matter, mind. So, but generally when Prabhupada uses the word transcendental, it is, it means spiritual only. Here also it seems like that. We will read, but in the next verse it becomes little more clearer. Therefore, beyond this gross manifestation is a transcendental manifestation, finer than the finest form. It has no beginning, no intermediate stage and no end. Therefore, it is beyond the limits of expression or mental speculation and is distinct from this material conception. Purport Prabhupada writes, the gross external body of the Supreme is manifested at certain intervals and thus the external feature or form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not the eternal form of the Lord, which has no beginning, no intermediate stage and no end. Anything which has a beginning or interim and end is called material. The material world is begun from the Lord, and thus the form of the Lord from the beginning of the material world is certainly transcendental to the finest or the finer material conception, like the Prabhupada writes. Of course, it very much seems like it is, he is indicating a spiritual form. But in the next verse, Shukadev Goswami says,
Amuni bhagavadrupe maya te hyanu varnite ube apina grinanti maya srishte vipaschitaha.
This interesting verse. It will sort of probably answer at least a part of your question. Here, Shukadev Goswami says, Vipaschitaha, intelligent people, wise people, na grananti, they do not accept Amuni Bhagavad Rupe Ube. Amuni means these, Ube means two, Bhagavad Rupe means form of the Lord. Wise people do not accept these two forms of the Lord. Which two forms? That which was discussed in the 33rd verse till 33rd verse, and that which was described in the 34th verse as a transcendental form. Both these forms, vipaschitaha, wise people, na grananti, do not accept. Why? Maya srishte, because both are created by matter. So here Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur mentions, Shukadeva Goswami condemns these two forms which are imposed on the Supreme Lord for the purpose of worship. Ghanshyamanandru, this word I want you to contemplate, this sentence. Shukadeva Goswami condemns these two forms which are imposed on the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the purpose of worship for some class of people. But the Lord itself does not actually have a form like that. The wise do not accept those two as objects of attainment, but only as forms of worship at the beginning stage, as they are made of Maya. But those who are really wise do not even accept these forms in the beginning. They instead accept the forms of Lord Ram, Krishna, etc. Okay? So, that's what is mentioned here. So, Maya Srishte, because they are created by matter, actually, people do not accept these two forms. Srila Prabhupada writes here, the monists have two ways of worship. One is, they worship the Virat Roop, which is called pantheism. Or they imagine the Lord to have no form, which is monism. But here Prabhupada writes, but both are rejected by the intelligent devotees. For example, when Arjuna saw the Virat Roop, he was afraid and asked to see the four-handed form. Therefore, the Lord can exhibit himself in many forms, but devotees are attracted only to his spiritual forms right from the beginning. Like that. So then, of course, Parikshit Maharaj had also asked to describe about the secondary later will take. He had also requested to hear about the secondary creation. So, Atmanam Kridayan Kridan Karoti Vikaroti Cha. This was in the fourth chapter of second canto. He had requested, he had spoken to Shukadeva Goswami mentioning that, how does the Supreme Lord himself play by engaging the Maya potency in creating, in performing the primary creation? And how does he engage Brahmaji and other Prajapatis in playing for creation of this secondary creation, Visarga, like that. So now that primary creation has been discussed in detail, now he is going to describe this Visarga, secondary creation. Savachavacha kataya Bhagavan Brahma Rupadrik Nama Rupa Kriya Datte Sakarma Karma Kapparaha. Mahavishnu, the Supreme Lord, even though not performing actions, as Uddhava says, Karma Nyanihasya Bhavo Abhavasyate. The Lord has no material actions, but Brahma Rupa Drik, Brahma Ka Rup Dharan Karke, accepting the form of Brahma, he performs Sakarma. He is akarmakaha, but through the form of Brahma, he performs sakarma. He performs actions. What actions? Nama rupa kriya datte. He creates names, forms and activities for the living beings. And as well, he creates names suitable for each type of body and its activities. Like some particular body, he creates a human body and he creates particular activities for those human bodies and he gives them the names Homo sapiens or human beings, whatever, like that. Prajapatin manun devan rishin pitraganan pratak
సిద్ధచారణ గంధర్వాన్ విద్యాధరాసురగుయ్యకాన్ కిన్నరాప్సరసోనాగాన్ సర్పాన్ కిం పురుషోరగాన్ మాతృరక్ష పిశాచాంశ్చ ప్రేతభూత వినాయకాన్ కూష్మాండోన్మాద వేతాళాన్ యాతు దానాన్ గ్రహానపి ఖగాన్ మృగాన్ పశూన్ వృక్షాన్ గిరీన్ నృప సరీసృపాన్ వివిధశ్చతుర్విధాయే యేన్యే జలస్థల నభోకసః.
దెన్ ద వేరియస్ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ స్పీషీస్ క్రియేటెడ్ బై బ్రహ్మాజీ అండ్ ది ప్రజాపతిస్ ఇస్ డిస్కస్డ్ హియర్. ఇట్ ఇస్ డిస్కస్డ్ ఇన్ మచ్ మోర్ డీటెయిల్ ఇన్ ది థర్డ్ క్యాంటో హౌ హీ క్రియేట్స్. లైక్ బ్రహ్మాజీ క్రియేటెడ్ ది ప్రజాపతిస్, ద మనూస్, ద సేజస్, పితృస్, విద్యాధరాస్, నాగాస్, వినాయకాస్, కూష్మాండాస్ అండ్ సో ఆన్. కుశలాకుశలామిశ్ర కర్మణాం గతయస్త్విమ సత్వం రజస్తమయితి తిస్రా సురనృనారకాః తత్రాప్యేకైకశోరాజన్ విద్యంతే గతయస్త్రిదా యదైకైకతరోన్యాభ్యాం స్వభావ ఉపహన్యతే. కర్మణాం గతయః, కర్మగతి, ద రిజల్ట్స్ ఆఫ్ యాక్షన్ ఆర్ కుశల, అకుశల అండ్ మిశ్ర. కుశల మీన్స్ గుడ్, అకుశల ఇస్ బ్యాడ్ అండ్ మిశ్ర ఇస్ మిక్స్డ్. బికాస్ ఆఫ్ ద త్రీ మోడ్స్ ఆఫ్ సత్వ రజస్ అండ్ తమస్, మెన్ బికమ్ దేవతాస్, హ్యూమన్స్ అండ్ ఇన్హాబిటెంట్స్ ఆఫ్ హెల్. ఊర్ధ్వం గచ్చంతి సత్వస్థ మధ్యే తిష్టంతి రాజస జగన్యగుణ వృత్తిస్థ అధో గచ్చంతి తామస. బట్ అఫ్ కోర్స్ ఇట్స్ లైక్ అ మోర్ జెనరిక్ స్టేట్మెంట్. నైదర్ ఆర్ దేవతాస్ ఇన్ ప్యూర్ సత్వ, నార్ ఆర్ హ్యూమన్ బీయింగ్స్ ఇన్ ప్యూర్ రజస్, అండ్ నార్ ఆర్ ఇన్హాబిటెంట్స్ ఆఫ్ హెల్ ఇన్ ప్యూర్ తమస్. ఇట్స్ జస్ట్ ఇట్స్ జనరలీ ఎ మిక్స్చర్. ఇట్ ఇండికేట్స్ ప్రిడామినెన్స్ యాక్చువల్లీ. ఓ రాజన్, దీస్ త్రీ టైప్స్ ఆఫ్ బీయింగ్స్ ఆర్ డివైడెడ్ ఇన్ టు త్రీ. తత్రాపి ఏకైకశో భిద్యంతే గతయ స్త్రిదాత్. త్రీ బికమ్స్ నైన్, నైన్ బికమ్స్ 81 అండ్ సో ఆన్. దట్స్ వై వి గెట్ 84 lakh స్పీషీస్. స ఏ వేదం జగద్దాత భగవాన్ ధర్మ రూపదృక్ పుష్ణాతి స్థాపయన్ విశ్వం తిర్యన్ నరసురాదిభిః. సో ద సెకండరీ క్రియేషన్ ఇస్ డిస్క్రైబ్డ్ ఇన్ వెరీ బ్రీఫ్. ఇట్ విల్ బి డిస్క్రైబ్డ్ ఇన్ మోర్ డీటెయిల్ ఇన్ ద థర్డ్ క్యాంటో విచ్ యూ హవ్ ఆల్రెడీ సీన్. జగద్దాత, ద మెయింటైనర్ ఆఫ్ దిస్ యూనివర్స్. ధర్మ రూపద్రిక్, అక్సెప్టింగ్ ది ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ విష్ణు. స్థాపయన్ ఇదం విశ్వం, హీ ఎస్టాబ్లిషెస్ దిస్ యూనివర్స్. పుష్ణాతి, హీ మెయింటైన్స్ ఇట్. తిర్య నృ సురాదిభి, హీ మెయింటైన్స్ ఇట్ విత్ వేరియస్ స్పీషీస్ సచ్ అస్ హ్యూమన్స్, అనిమల్స్, దేవతాస్ ఎక్సెట్రా. తతకాలాగ్ని రుద్రాత్మా యత్సృష్టం ఇదమాత్మనః సన్నియచ్చతి కాలేన గణానీకం ఇవానిలః. దెన్ ఇన్ ది ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ కాలాగ్ని రుద్ర, లార్డ్ శివ, సన్నియచ్చతి, హీ డిస్ట్రాయ్స్ దిస్ యూనివర్స్. యద్ ఆత్మన సృష్టం విచ్ హీ ఓన్లీ క్రియేటెడ్, లైక్ దట్. ఓ, దిస్ ఇస్ వెరీ ఇంపార్టెంట్ వర్స్, 44th verse, we'll spend some time. So, in one sense, the whole description is over. And more or less, the whole of second canto, Shukadeva Goswami has described about the activities of the Purushavataras, creation. So now he says, Ittam bhavena katito bhagavan bhagavattamah netam bhavena hiparam ద్రష్టుమ్ అర్హంతి సూరయ. హి సేస్ భగవత్తమః, గ్రేట్ ట్రాన్సెండెంటలిస్ట్, గ్రేట్ డివోటీస్, ఇత్తం భావేన కథితః భగవాన్. ఇన్ దిస్ వే దే డిస్క్రైబ్ ద సుప్రీం పర్సనాలిటీ ఆఫ్ గాడ్ ఇట్. సో ఇత్తం భావేన రిఫర్స్ టు వాట్? In this way, they describe the Lord as being the creator, maintainer, and destroyer of this material universe. And they are great transcendentalists, no doubt. Na ittam bhavena, he param drashtum aranti suraya. Surayaha, but much more advanced devotees, arhanti, drashtum arhanti. They are qualified to see the Lord, na ittam bhavena, not just as the creator. Creator, maintainer and destroyer of this universe. So, which means, like we saw the other day, the prayer of Dhruva Maharaj as to how the progress from the Brahman realization to Bhagavan realization is like a spectrum. When one progresses more and more in bhakti, that same Brahman starts assuming more and more qualities. He is willing to accept the absolute truth to possess more and more qualities. And this acceptance of Purushavataras, as Vaishnavas, we also accept Purushavataras. We don't say that there is nothing called Purushavataras. But we do not accept the Purushavatara feature as the highest understanding of absolute truth. It is mentioned, what is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's understanding? Aradyo Bhagavan Vrajesha Tanaya Taddama Vrindavanam Ramya Kachit Upasana Vrajavadu Vargenaya Kalpita Srimad Bhagavatam Purana Mamalam Prema Pumarto Mahan Shri Taitanya Mahaprabhum Matamidam Tatradaro Nappara. Aradyo Bhagavan, the worshipable Lord, is not the Srishtikarta. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhum Matamidam, opinion of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is Vrajesha Tanaya. He is not even the Lord of Vrindavan. Let that post go to Nanda Maharaj. He is the son of the Lord of Vrindavan, which is a small village. And Taddama Vrindavanam. And his abode is not Dwaraka, his abode is Vrindavan. Ramya Kachit Upasana Vrajavadu Vargenaya Kalpita. And the way to worship that Bhagavan is following in the footsteps of the Vrajavadus. That is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's opinion. So therefore, in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, it explains or it teaches the followers to appreciate the Supreme Lord in His terms. Because if you go to South India, most of the temples, Divyadeshams, you have a Vishnu form. Mostly it is Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu who is lying down. If you watch carefully, you will see a lotus coming out of the navel also. In some temples, it's explicitly, you know, you can see it very clearly, like in Anantapadmanabh temple and other temples. In some temples, it's not so clear. If you don't carefully observe, you may miss out. So mostly it's Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu or some Purushavatara features that is described. Okay. So, but that's not the highest understanding, because all said and done, it's a very self-centered way of looking at the Supreme Lord. It's describing the Supreme Lord in our terms. Because I am a part of this universe and the Lord maintains this universe, so therefore that should be His only job, to maintain this universe so that I can have a very comfortable life. So appreciating the Purushavatara features as the highest understanding of the Supreme Lord is, in one sense, glorifying the Supreme Lord in our terms, not in His terms. So, therefore, in Chaitanya Shikshamrit, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about primary names and secondary names. So, he says that the secondary names are those names of the Supreme Lord which are describing the Supreme Lord in our terms, which means with respect to this material universe. Srishtikarta, Jagatkarta, like that. But the primary names are those names in which He is glorified in a way He likes to be glorified. Okay? So, we have had so much of philosophy in the last 4 days. So, let's take few minutes to sing a bhajan which Bhaktivinoda Thakur has composed which is filled with all primary names, the way in which Krishna likes to be addressed. So this Yashomati Nandana, so we'll chant this bhajan and glorify the Supreme Lord in his terms. Because till now last 4 days we have studied the Purushavatara features. But of course, Shukadeva Goswami concludes that section by mentioning, but this is not the highest understanding of the Supreme Lord. Some exalted devotees, they are qualified to appreciate the Supreme Lord in his terms. And how do we appreciate the Lord in his terms? Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written in this bhajan.
Yashomati Nandana Braja Varanagara Yashomati Nandana Braja Varanagara Gokula Ranjana Kana Gopi Paranadana Madana Manohara Kali Adamana Vedana Amala Harina Mamiya Vilasa Amala Harinam Amiya Vilasa Vipina Purandara Navina Nagaravara Vamshivadana Suvasa Brajajana Palana Surakula Nashana Nanda Godana Rakovala Govinda Madhava Navanita Taskara Govinda Madhava Navanita Taskara Sundarananda Gopala Yamuna Tatajara Gopi Vasanahara
రసరసిక కృపమాయా శ్రీరాధా వల్లభ వృందావన నటవారా శ్రీరాధా వల్లభ వృందావన నటవారా భక్తి వినోదాశాయ భక్తి వినోదాశాయ హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే 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 కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే 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 కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే హరే యశోమతి నందన వ్రజ వరణాగార గోకుల రంజన కానా
So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, this Krishna is my ashraya vigraha, Bhakati Vinoda Ashraya. This is the Krishna whom I take shelter of. This is my Lord. Who? So he says, Yashomati Nandana. He is the beloved son of Mother Yashoda. Brajavara Nagara. What is the meaning of Nagara? Dear, lover. It's like one who roams around without much purpose. That's the literal meaning of Nagara. One who loafs around without much purpose. So, Brajavara Nagara. Gokula Ranjana, one who gives delight to Gokul. Basically, there is not much Aishwarya attached to the Supreme Lord. This is the way that Lord likes to be addressed in conjunction with his dear devotees. Like we saw yesterday that when it comes to the spiritual world, Krishna doesn't want to depute even a small thing. He wants to do it himself. Like bringing Nanda Maharaj's slippers or carrying his friends. He doesn't say that, no, I am the Supreme Lord, why should I carry Sri Dama, you Subal, you carry. You know, he doesn't say. He himself carries. So, and then it is mentioned, Gopi Paranadana Madana Manohar. He is the giver of life of the gopis. And Madana Manohar, he steals the heart of even Cupid, Kaliya Damana. And he is the punisher of Kaliya. Amala Harinam Amiya Vilasa. These pure holy names of the Lord of Lord Hari are full of sweet nectarian pastimes. Vipina Purandar, he is the Lord of the 12 forests of Vraja. Again, Navina Nagaravara. Nagaravara means best of the Okay, and then Vamsi Vadana, one who plays on his flute. So many people play flute, but still he likes to be called Vamsi Vadana. Suvasa, he is the best dresser. There are so many very good dressers. And you know, the whole fashion industry is creating better and better dresses. And Brajajana Palana. Even though he is the one who takes care of the people of unlimited number of universes, still he likes to be called Vrajajana Palana. Vraja is but a small manifestation, whether you take it in Bauma Vrindavan or Goloka Vrindavan. It's not the whole creation. It's only a part of it. So Krishna protects everyone. As King Kulashekar says, Lokasya Vyasana Panodana Karo. Krishna, he removes the miseries and he protects every living entity, whether he is rebellious or ignorant, whatever it may be, Krishna protects. But, so he has Dasasya Kimnakshama. So if he is protecting everyone without asking, then what he would not do to his own devotee. So here it is, Bhaktivinoda Thakur indicates, even though Krishna protects all inhabitants of all universes, still he likes to be called as protector of the Vrajavasis. Like that. And so on. So many such beautiful names Krishna is addressed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he says, this Krishna is my Ashraya Vigraha. Bhakati Vinoda Ashraya. So that is glorifying the Supreme Lord in his terms, in a way he likes to be glorified. Otherwise, to ascribe only material qualities to or material potencies to the Supreme Lord is minimizing him, actually. So here in the purport of this verse, Srila Prabhupada writes, the Lord is not only the creator and destroyer of the material manifestations of his different energies. He is more than a simple creator and destroyer, for there is his feature of ananda, or his pleasure feature. This pleasure feature of the Lord is understood by the pure devotees only and not by the others. The impersonalist is satisfied simply by understanding the all-pervasive influence of the Lord. So Prabhupada takes from the one end of the spectrum, which is Brahman realization. Greater than the impersonalist is the mystic who sees the Lord situated in his heart as Paramatma. Paramatma is the Purushavatara features. This is still higher understanding. But there are pure devotees who take part in the direct pleasure potency of the Lord by factual reciprocation of loving service. So this is appreciating the Lord as Bhagavan. The Lord in his abode, called the Vaikuntha planets, which are eternal manifestations, always remains with his associates and enjoys transcendental loving services by his pure devotees in different transcendental humors. The pure devotees of the Lord thus undergo a practice of the devotional service to the Lord during the manifestation of the creation and take full advantage of the manifestation by qualifying themselves into the kingdom of God. So they want to establish a relationship with God. With Purushavataras, you know, one would not want to establish any relationship with the Purushavataras. One may at the most gratefully acknowledge that the Supreme Lord is protecting their abode. That much one can do, but one would wonder, how can someone establish a relationship with the Purushavataras? So later Prabhupada writes, the highest glorious association with the Lord is made possible in the planet of Goloka Vrindavan, where Lord Krishna enjoys himself with the gopis and his favorite animals, the Surabhi cows. Like that. So that is the highest perfection of personalism. Is to appreciate Krishna in his abode without any tinge of Aishwarya. Like that. That's the Gaudiya Vaishnava understanding or appreciation of the highest understanding of absolute truth. So then he says, Nasya karmani janmadau parasyanu vidiyate kartritva pratishedartam mayayaropitam hitat. So he says, na asya karmani janma adau. After describing a whole canto of how the Lord creates, maintains and destroys, towards the end of this whole canto, Shukadeva Goswami says, na asya karmani janma adau. The Lord does not carry out the activities of creation, maintenance and destruction of the universe directly. Parasya kartritva pratishedartam. His direct involvement is denied everywhere. If one carefully understands the scriptures, one would understand that the Lord is not directly involved in creation, maintenance and destruction. Mayaya aropitam hitat. These activities performed by Maya are ascribed to him. What is the meaning of ascribed? Attributing. If you know, attributing someone else's accomplishment to someone else. He did something, you say that no, he did it. That is ascribing his accomplishment to someone else. Actually, Mayadevi creates, maintains, and destroys, but it is ascribed to the Supreme Lord. Why? Because otherwise people will think that Mayadevi is the independent creator. Pratishedartam. What is that verse? Maya adhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. That's what Krishna says. Under my supervision, it is prakriti who creates. Characharam. Entities in this material universe. So basically this verse says that even though so much has been spoken about the Purushavataras being engaged in creation, maintenance and destruction, actually they do not directly do it. Actually it is Maya potency who does, and it is only ascribed to them because people should not be thinking that Mayadevi or material nature is the independent creator. So the emphasis of this verse is Lord is not the direct creator. Which is how Prabhupada writes his translation. But if you read his purport, it's totally opposite for a specific reason. Prabhupada writes, the Vedic direction for the creation, maintenance and destruction of the material world is this. Yatova imani bhutani jayante yena jatani jivanti yat prayanti abhisam vishanti. That is, everything is created by Brahman After creation, everything is maintained by Brahman. And after annihilation, everything is conserved in Brahman. This verse mentions that the Lord is not directly creator, maintainer and destroyer. But Prabhupada is quoting a verse which, where the emphasis is on the Lord being the creator, maintainer and destroyer. There is a specific reason for this. I'll just read my notes. Foolish materialists, without the knowledge of the Supreme Lord, ascribe the creation of the universe to material nature. Prabhupada says the opposite. Foolish materialists, without the knowledge of the Supreme Lord, ascribe the creation of the universe to material nature. Do you see the difference? This verse says, one wise people would not ascribe the creation of the material universe to the Supreme Lord. But Prabhupada says, foolish people ascribe the creation of this material universe to material nature, which is exactly the opposite. Because Prabhupada understands a more deeper problem that's prevalent right now. People are more than ready to deny the existence of God. They are already ascribing the creation to the material universe only. So Prabhupada understands that that's a more pressing problem here. So he keeps the verse aside and addresses the more pressing issue. He says that foolish people ascribe material nature to be the creator. But the verse says, only foolish people would ascribe the Supreme Lord to be the creator. Exact opposite. And Prabhupada says, intelligent people understand that the Lord is the creator. Material nature is not the creator. But this verse says that material nature is the creator. Supreme Lord is not the creator. But basically the point is, when this verse says Lord is not the creator, it is for the purpose that one should not think that the Lord is directly involved in all this creation. He deputes it to the material nature. But the pressing problem now is people want to get away with God. They want to say that the Lord has nothing to do. There is nothing called God. It's only the material nature which creates. Which was exactly the reason why the scriptures also talk about the Lord being the creator. Because people would eventually start telling, material nature is the independent creator. So therefore here Prabhupada says that Lord is only the creator. Of course, he may depute it to his material nature, but Prabhupada gives this example of goat's nipples in his neck. Ajagalasthana nyaya. There is something like nipple in the neck of a goat, but if you try to milk it, nothing will come out. Okay? So, like that. So therefore, basically he is trying to explain that the material nature is not the independent creator. The material nature is empowered by the Supreme Lord to create. Like that. So then he continues, Ayam tu brahmana kalpa savikalpa udahritah vidisadharano yatra sarga prakrita vaikritah. The life of Brahma has divisions of days. The usual procedure is that the primary creation takes place on the first day of Brahma and Visarga, the secondary creation, takes place every day of Brahma. So this is the Sadharana Vidhi, which means there might be some exceptions in some kalpas. But the general rule is that primary creation takes place at the beginning of Brahma's life and secondary creation takes place every day of Brahmaji's life. Parimanam chakalasya kalpa lakshana vigraham yata purastad vyakyasye patmam kalpam ato shrunu. Purastad vyakyasya. I will explain to you later. Parimanam chakalasya. You had asked me about the measurement of time and all that. I will explain that to you later. Patmam kalpam ato shrunu. Now let me describe to you about the Padma kalpa. So, this is what Sukadeva Goswami is telling. So, And Suta Goswami is narrating the same episode to Shaunakadi Rishis. But Shaunakadi Rishis say, stop. We don't want to hear about Padma Kalpa right now. Okay, enough about creation. We want to hear about some other topic right now. He says, Shaunaka Uvacha Yadahano Bhavan Suta Kshatta Bhagavatottamah Chachara Tirthani Bhuvas Tyaktva Bandun Sudustyajan Kshattuk Kaushara Vestasya Samvadotyatma Samshrita Yadvasa Bhagavams Tasmai Prishtas Tattvam Uvachah Bruhinastad Idam Saumya Vidurasya Vicheshtitam. He says, oh, there is one more line. Okay. So he says that, my dear Suta Goswami, we will definitely hear about Padma Kalpa, no doubt. But for now, we have a desire to hear about another subject matter about which you mentioned in the 13th chapter of first canto. You mentioned that how when Vidura came to instruct Dhritarashtra, before he met Dhritarashtra, you mentioned that he had met with Maitreya and they had a very nice conversation. So we are interested in hearing about that conversation that happened between Maitreya and Vidura. So can you please share about that wonderful conversation that happened between Maitreya and Vidura? And you can speak about Padma Kalpa later, no problem. So Suta Goswami responds. All of a sudden, because one topic has ended and Shukadeva Goswami is moving on to a next topic. So they said, okay, before we move on to the next topic, we are interested in knowing about that conversation that happened between Vidura and Maitreya. So can you please speak about it? So, in fact, when he starts speaking about Vidura Maitreya Samvad, through Vidura Maitreya Samvad, he speaks about Padma Kalpa only. So he says, I will fulfill your desire and I will fulfill my desire also. You have asked a very relevant question, because Vidura Maitreya also speaks to Vidura about Padma Kalpa. So it's an appropriate question that you have asked. So through describing that conversation between Vidura and Maitreya, I will speak about Padma Kalpa. So at this point, we will end with this and then we will take questions. So Suta Goswami says, how wonderful. It's not a breach of etiquette, because at this very same point in the story, Parikshit Maharaj also expressed the same desire to Shukadeva Goswami. He also said, can you please speak about the conversation that happened between Maitreya and Vidura? So the conversation continues. So he says, Suta Uvacha Rajna Parikshito Parikshita Prishto Yadavochan Mahamunihi Tadvo Vidasye Shrunuta Rajna Prashnanusaratah. I will explain to you what the great sage Shukadeva spoke in response to Parikshit when asked by Parikshit. So Parikshit Maharaj also asked at this point in the story, he requested Shukadeva Goswami, can you please speak about the conversation between Maitreya and Vidura? So same thing is mentioned by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. And Prabhupada writes here in the purport, any question that is put forward may be answered by quoting the authority, and that satisfies the saner section. So anything you quote, there must be some praman for it. And Prabhupada is the best living example for this. Any statement he makes, he quotes some praman to substantiate. That is the system even in the law court. The best lawyer gives evidence from the past judgment of the court without taking much trouble to establish his case. He need not establish his case. Just, use the previous judgments and present on this particular date, this was the judgment passed and so on. This is called the parampara system, and the learned authorities follow it without manufacturing rubbish interpretations. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the second canto, 10th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki.